It's the Long Coat Mafia Podcast.
Hello, everyone. I am the Reverend Godfather of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. This is the second of five episodes taken from a much larger recording that we did for the Chocolate Festival that was here in Martinsburg this past April 23rd, 2016. In this particular episode, you hear poets / spoken word artists Darcy Farrell, Kelly McDermott Harmon, and Jacob Pratt. The MC that you hear is Don Ramirez. And I'll have to give special credit to a guest announcer by the name of Isaac Antonetti. Hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He helped Earl announce Kelly to the stage. And the reason why I'm also included Darcy in this, because she was one of the first ones on stage, and I didn't want her to feel left out of all the trimming. I hope you enjoy this and the other spoken word artists in this program. We have three more willing to go for you guys, and plus announcements at the end of this. So please enjoy the program. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Darcy Farrell.
Hi, my name is Darcy Farrell. I wrote these poems when I was in the fifth grade, and the first one I'm going to read was an assignment I had to do about friendship. One thing I like to find in a friend is that their friendship never ends. I also like people with humor and hope they do not spread rumors. I hope they play sports, and I hope they wear shorts. I wonder if they possess the devotion of success. I would pray for them in bad health, and I would not care about their wealth. They would be my hero until my heart beats to zero. That is a good thing about friends. The friendship never ends. The second poem I wrote, I was also in fifth grade, and this was a Mother's Day gift to my mom. I look in the mirror, but all I see is my mother and me. On the playground, she spins me round and round. So when I look inside, I have my hands tied for that special woman that held me when I was a child. And when she styles my hair, I look around and I stare, because I have my mother in me. If I ever needed her, she would be there. So if you ever ask, I do have my mother in me.
I'm just going to talk for a few minutes while we let some of our audience members work their way back here. This is our second year at Chocolate Festival, and I wanted to take a moment to recognize the people that have helped make this event happen, especially you, Earl. Earl Harrison has put a tremendous amount of work into the Chocolate Festival and keeping these events going for 2 years in a row. Last summer, we worked on a nice series of spoken word performances at Good Natured, and we're hoping to do more projects like that this coming summer. Also, next Saturday, April the 30th, we're doing a very special film screening at the Art Center in Martinsburg. That program begins at 7 p.m. It's a collection of 8 16-millimeter film prints from the Enoch Pratt Library. So program begins at 7 p.m. I hope we get a good turnout for that. Again, I want to thank everyone for coming out to the Chocolate Festival. And in a couple of minutes, we'll have our next feature performer.
All right. All right, Mr. Isaac Antonetti wants to say a few words. Here we go. What do you want to say? Say, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Our next performer.
Our next performer.
Is world renowned.
A world renowned.
A world class traveler.
A world class traveler.
Bon vivant.
Bon vivant.
Oh, my God, my man. Okay, A world class wit.
A world class wit.
She is capable. Of delivery. Badinage. Repartees. And just total fun. Miss Kelly.
McDermott.
Harmon.
Woo!
Say, give it up, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a tough act to follow.
Well, at our next act, we'll let you do it, okay?
Thank you.
That one doesn't work. Your dad rigged it. They knew you were coming. Can you lower this a little bit?
Okay. You tell me. Is that good? This is fine. I think. Yeah, this should be good. Not at all. I think that's the best introduction I've ever had in my life. He can introduce me anytime. So I'm going to read a few pieces from my book, Did I Say That Out Loud? And the first one is Mom Says You're Adopted, Part 2. I was 6 years old when my brother Dan was born. I don't remember being too impressed when he just showed up. He just took up space and my parents' attention. Plus, there didn't seem to be much of a win in it for me. So I ignored him and concentrated on more important matters, like decorating my bike for the annual Easter parade and torturing my sister. Things changed when he got a little older and you could actually interact with him. Looking back, I realized he was a very cute kid. He was roly and poly in all the right places, and he walked around like a little old man with his hands clasped behind his back. He reminded you of an absent-minded professor because he was always thinking and observing. His dark brown eyes, the color of a deeply roasted coffee bean, missed nothing. And just when you thought you were dealing with a regular little boy, he'd look at you and ask, "When you're dreaming, can you dream that you're having a dream?" And you'd be left there staring at him, wondering, "Who the hell are you, kid?" He was also incredibly confident. I would try the old Mom Says You're Adopted routine, and he would just stare at me with those wise 4-year-old eyes and smile. He wasn't buying it for 1 minute. Then he would go outside, round up all the little girls in the neighborhood, and charge them 5 cents apiece to see his penis. My brother came out of the birth canal figuring out how to make money. I think when Dan was born, the universe, or God, or whoever is in charge of that sort of thing, realized they couldn't just give Dan this incredible intelligence, confidence and entrepreneurial spirit, not to mention perfectly straight white teeth, without making him work for it. So in order to make it interesting, someone up there said, "Let's spend the first 10 years of his life trying to kill him. And if he makes it through the first decade, we'll stop messing with him." I'm not exaggerating. By the time he entered his 11th year, my brother had nearly drowned so many times that we lost count. He fell headfirst from a 3-story banister onto a marble floor. He spent several days in the hospital. The doctors could not believe he wasn't in a coma. He narrowly escaped abduction from a taxi by a wild-eyed West African militant. And finally, he nearly fell out of a car going 60 miles per hour when he opened the passenger door just to see what would happen. My father, who was driving the car, grabbed my brother's shirt collar and pulled him back to safety just as Dan was pitching headfirst onto the asphalt. That was the day I learned several choice curse words, courtesy of my father's younger days in the Navy. When Dan was 4 years old, he stopped walking and began to run everywhere. He did not stop running until he turned 12, which is the year we learned about the correlation between sugar and ADHD. Unfortunately, his fat little legs often kept going long after his brain told them to stop. And so as a result, he has several scars on his forehead, courtesy of any number of doors, wall corners, and the occasional piece of furniture. It got so bad that one morning, as I was primping in the bathroom, and my brother was running through the house, I heard a loud splat, followed by a sickening, crunchy sort of thump, and the nanny, assigned to watch my brother at all times, started yelling for help. I didn't even bother going into the kitchen. I knew what I would see. My brother splayed out on the floor with his eyes rolled back in his head and blood pouring all over from the place, yet another split in his forehead, while his nanny hysterically tried to revive him before my parents got home from work. Because of this penchant for self-destruction, the entire family took to indulging my brother whenever possible. Who knew how much longer we'd have him around? So Dan grew up hearing the word no a lot less than most kids. And I don't mean in a spoiled, you never get in trouble kind of way. He got in trouble all the time. I mean, seriously, all the time. I'm talking about allowing the kid to follow his interests wherever they might take him. And for Dan, those interests always involved starting businesses. The first time we took him to the library at around age 5, he was so enthralled by the concept that he came home and glued envelopes to the back of every book in the house. Leslie and I had to check out books approximately 14 times a day for 2 weeks. Dan was always claiming that our books were past due, thus requiring that we pay a fine of 5 cents per book. Leslie and I just took the money from the pile of change on my dad's dresser and gave it to my brother. We knew he'd lose it in about 10 minutes, and then we could go put it back. The first Sunday after attending church, instead of getting dumped into the kiddie room, my brother came home and rearranged the living room. He placed all the dining room chairs in rows down the middle and put on my father's long brown bathrobe. It had a hood, which he placed over his little round head. The rest of the family had to attend Mass every day for about a week. Dan would stand in front of the stereo with the coffee table as a makeshift altar. He would open the Bible and begin to pray. Unfortunately, he could not read yet, and nor could he remember what the priest said during the sermon, so he kind of made it up as he went along. "We are gathered here for praying," Dan would intone, "and for the bread of the mighty and the angels in heaven, and God bless America." And then naturally we had to pass around the donation basket and give him all our change. In defense of Dan's avariciousness, he also loved the part when it was time to show each other the sign of peace. "Everyone hugs now," he would yell as he counted up his change. "Lots of hugging, please." When he was 6 years old, we moved to Greece. We lived in a suburb near Athens, and on just about every corner, there were little shacks called kiosks that sold newspapers, fruit, candy, and any number of convenience items. Dan was in heaven. Commandeering one of the large shipping boxes from our move, he spent an entire day cutting out windows and a door and coloring the outside of the box to look like a kiosk. He then walked over to the local stores and talked them into giving him fruit and consignment to sell in his shop. How he managed to pull this off is a mystery. I can picture him now, this serious 3.5-foot-tall entrepreneur, negotiating oranges and apples with the bemused shop owners. For several weeks, every time you found something small missing from your room, the first place you would look was Dan's store, and naturally he was always more than happy to sell our property back to us. By the time he was 10, we were living in the States. Now that Dan had no longer had a language barrier to deal with, plus access to a telephone and phone book, there was no stopping him. Every day was an adventure for my parents, as Dan still relied on them for transportation. He decided to become a magician, practicing his magic tricks on all of us until we were struck dumb from exhaustion. One day, he announced to my father he needed to be driven to a local church as he had been hired to perform his magic tricks at a function there. Imagine the pastor's surprise when Dan the Magnificent turned out to be a chubby 10-year-old boy wearing a top hat and oversized cape, strolling in with the confidence of David Copperfield. Mom put the kibosh on Dan's career when she intercepted a call from the local telephone company. They were just calling to confirm the half-page advertisement he'd recently ordered. Having made some money from his short-lived career as a magician, Dan decided he needed to secure his own transportation. I think this had something to do with the threats he received from my parents about the consequences of any more last-minute scrambles to get him somewhere. Plus, he had just learned about paper routes. Driving home from a shopping trip, my parents were alarmed to see a small boy riding a bicycle through the middle of traffic. Oblivious to the blaring horns and narrowly missing bumpers, the kid furiously pedaled his way between a large van and the local bus. The closer my parents got to the boy, the more familiar he appeared. "Oh my God," exclaimed my mother, "I think that's Daniel." And sure enough, it was. My brother had read about a bike for sale in the local classifieds. He grabbed his wallet and walked for several miles across town to negotiate the purchase of his new two-wheeler. He was on his way back to the house when he was intercepted by my parents. Throwing the bike into the trunk and strapping my brother onto the back seat, they drove home to fix themselves each a very strong martini. Desperate to find something that would keep my brother closer to home, my parents bought him a CB radio. Smokey and the Bandit was Dan's favorite movie at the time, so he was delighted to spend most of his waking hours sitting in his bedroom chatting with truckers all over the state. It didn't take him long to pick up their unique vernacular, and it became common to walk by Dan's bedroom and hear Breaker, breaker, this is Station 139. I've got a smoky report. There's a bear in a plain brown wrapper waiting up in the bush at mile marker 44. You probably want to back it on down. And while this was annoying, at least my parents could keep an eye on him. I'm sure the CB radio station would have worked for a much longer time had my mother not woken up one morning at 6 a.m. to find a big, burly, middle-aged truck driver wearing overalls and a three-day beard standing in the upstairs hallway. He and my 11-year-old brother were discussing the pros and cons of Dan's base station. Apparently, Dan had started a conversation with this man around 5 a.m. and invited him over to the house for a cup of coffee and to talk shop. It took my mother several hours to calm down, even though the truck driver was very polite and left immediately after seeing the look on my mother's face. To this day, if you bring up the incident to my mother, she will tell you that she's blocked it from her memory. She chooses instead to talk about how later in the day, when the mail was delivered, Dan received a letter from the White House. President Carter, while sincerely appreciating the kind invitation to supper, regretfully declined due to several pressing matters of state. So the next one I'm going to read is called A Love Letter to My Husband. If I can find it. Ah, here we go. Dear Bob, in the chick flicks I watch with my girlfriends, the guy is always doing romantic stuff for the girl, sending flowers, writing poems, scattering rose petals, and whispering sweet nothings into her ear. Some of my friends will sigh during these parts and wish their husbands were half as romantic. Not me. Just so you know, I love you because you buy in bulk. During our 21 years of marriage, I have never had to look for batteries, light bulbs, tissue, toilet paper, paper towels, or stamps. They magically seem to repopulate in our home. Now you travel to Syracuse every week and live in a hotel Monday through Friday. You refuse to go to Costco on the weekends because that's when people tend to shop with 13 members of their family, all of whom want to stop and sample every tasting station while walking four across down every aisle, and I can't say I blame you. However, as a result of this new lifestyle, I am currently out of light bulbs. I cannot mail anything because I can't find the stamps, and I don't remember where we keep the extra paper towels. The laundry soap container is empty, so I've worn the same clothes for 3 days. I used the last garbage bag 4 days ago, and I keep stuffing trash into the already overflowing container because I don't have time to go to the store. I have not watched television all week because I cannot find my faraway glasses. I put them somewhere in the house and you are not here to tell me where you saw them. Not that it matters because I still cannot figure out how to use the remote control for the TV. Apparently, the recycle and trash people come on Tuesday, not Wednesday, and I've learned this the hard way. And once again, I accidentally left my headlights on overnight, so the battery in the car is dead. And this means I'm homebound because I'm afraid to do that spark plug jump start thing with that machine that has the big pincher grabbers that you do for me every other month or so when this accidentally happens. I know I will get thrown across the garage if I try to do this myself. I'm glad you'll be coming home tomorrow because I think Sadie is depressed. I know she's just a cat, but I think she misses you. We've not had bad kitty time for 2 weeks, and she just mopes around the house. She doesn't even chew my hair anymore. You should probably pay extra attention to her this weekend, especially since football season is finally over. Love, Kelly. Thank you. Okay, I'll just read two more. Where's Earl? Is that okay? Well, he's busy talking and not paying attention, so I'll just keep reading. The next one I'm going to read is called Potty Training is Not for Sissies. You feel my pain already, huh? Potty training is not for sissies. Where's her diaper bag? I asked my son as he dropped off my 3-year-old granddaughter. Amy's potty trained. She doesn't need a diaper bag anymore, he replied. Amy promptly pulled down her pants to show me her big girl panties. Wow, that was fast, I said. And then I turned to Amy. Let's go swimming. The two of us went to the local community center and spent a lovely hour swimming in the kiddie pool. I put Amy in swimming diapers just to be on the safe side. I don't really care if she pees in the pool. As everyone knows, the liquid in a kiddie pool is half chlorine and half urine anyway. But I didn't want any other type of accidents to happen in the water. After our swim, we went into the locker room to change. And while I dressed, a naked Amy played peekaboo by backing into an empty locker and pretending to shut the door. All the ladies in the locker room were smiling at her cuteness, and that is until she stood up in front of the locker and began to pee on the floor. "I'm peeing," said Amy. "I see," I replied, and I dropped a towel on the floor, plopping her on top of it. "If you're going to pee, then pee on the towel." "Okay." Suddenly, Amy began to squat down on the towel. "I have to poop," she said. "No," I yelled, "no pooping on the towel." I grabbed Amy's naked body and ran to the toilets. "Pooping toddler, out of my way," I yelled to the women. I managed to get Amy onto the toilet just in time. Back at the lockers, we both finished getting dressed. I began to wonder about her status as a potty-trained toddler. As I bent down to tie my shoe, a familiar odor wafted up from where Amy was sitting. "Oh, please don't have pooped again," I prayed silently. Carefully, I snuck a peek into the back of her pants, only to be greeted by a sea of brown sludge slowly creeping up the back of her big girl panties and down the sides. Amy looked at me. "I pooped again," she announced. "No kidding." Grabbing Amy once again and holding her as far away from me as possible, I ran back into the bathroom stall. The entire locker room reeked of poop, and nobody was thinking Amy was very cute any longer. In fact, several people were coughing. Once in this extremely small stall, I tried to figure out how I'd handle the tsunami of poop surging from her body. "Just stand there and don't move," I commanded. I had to leave the stall to go wet some paper towels to help with the cleanup because, of course, I did not have a diaper bag. Arriving back into the bathroom stall, I was greeted with a world of smeared poop. It was all over the toilet, the walls, the floor, the toilet paper dispenser, and my granddaughter. "Oh, Jesus," I said. "Oh, Jesus," replied Amy as she wiped her dirty fingers onto her fat belly. About 100 paper towels later, I had Amy in some semblance of cleanliness. I threw away her undies along with the paper towels and had yet to put her back into her clothes. "I thought you were potty trained," I told her. "I am," she said proudly, standing there naked in front of me with her pot belly sticking out and her chubby thighs quivering with pride. Well, who am I to argue? I gave her a hug. "Let's go to McDonald's on the way home." So this last one is called Wax Kit for Sale. I just tried to give myself a bikini wax. I am now covered in pink, sticky goo. It's everywhere. My desk, my hands, the microwave, my underwear, my leg, my pants, the garbage can, my computer keyboard, and quite possibly, my cat. How did it get there? How did I get there, you ask? Well, it all started with the question, how hard can it be? It occurred to me about a week ago that my wedding anniversary was right around the corner. For reasons that I now cannot fathom, I decided to purchase a do-it-yourself home wax kit. I came home, put the box in the bathroom drawer, and promptly forgot about it. This morning, I came downstairs to find a lovely anniversary card waiting for me on the kitchen table from my husband, Bob. He's very lucky that he has Hallmark to tell me how much he loves me. I gave him a big hug as he left for work and settled down in my home office for a day full of conference calls, training sessions, and project management. At about 10:45, I remembered my wax kit. I wasn't sure how long it would take me to give myself a bikini wax, and I had a pretty full schedule. So I decided to kill two birds with one stone and give myself the wax job while I was attending an 11 p.m. webinar call. After all, it was just watching computer slides while I listened to the presenter on my telephone. I could push the speakerphone button and put the phone on mute, and in addition, the instructions said to melt the wax in the microwave, which was in the kitchen next to my office. This could not be more convenient. Carefully following the directions on the box, I heated the wax in the microwave. While stirring the pot, I accidentally got some of the hot pink wax on the handle of the black microwave. I carried the heated wax along with all the accoutrements to my office. I dialed into the conference call and connected to the presentation. Once I confirmed I was connected, I muted my phone and dropped my pants down to my knees. I left on my underwear because, after all, it was a bikini wax. The instructions said to take the wooden applicator and smear the pink wax onto the area to be treated. As I started smearing the goo onto my right thigh, I remembered that the glass windows on either side of my front door provided a clear view into my office. I sent up a mental prayer asking that no one come by the front door until this process was completed. You know, those wooden applicators are kind of tricky to hold, and I got some wax on my desk while I was trying to apply it to my thigh. I then proceeded to get wax on my pants, my chair, and my underwear. My cat, Sadie, decided to inspect what I was doing and got too close to the applicator. I yelled at her and tried pushing her away, which resulted in me having to pick cat fur off the applicator, and I'm pretty sure her nose was hot pink when she ran back into the kitchen. The process so far had taken so long, my computer monitor went to sleep and I could no longer see the slides. Not that it mattered, because I had stopped listening to the presenter about the same time Sadie jumped on my lap. But I swear I thought my hand was clean when I touched the keyboard to wake up the monitor. Step 3 in the instructions said to carefully place a strip of muslin over the wax on my leg. Smoothing the cloth into place, I double-checked the telephone to make sure I was still muted, and then I quickly ripped the strip off of muslin and screamed, "God bless America," at the top of my lungs. At this precise moment, the UPS man dropped a package off at my front door and rang the doorbell. By the speed in which he returned to his delivery truck, I suspect he heard me scream, looked through the window, and saw a maniacal woman with her head thrown back in agony, sitting in a chair with her pants down around her ankles and hot pink blobs flying everywhere, and decided that a quick retreat was probably the wisest course of action. I threw the strip of muslin into the trash can under my desk, where it now remains stuck on the side of the barrel. I tried to take off the remaining wax with the remover in the box, because there's no freaking way I'm doing that again, ever. And for the record, the wax remover is worthless. I then applied the soothing lotion that came in the kit, but it is tinted for what appears to be an Asian woman suffering from jaundice. My right thigh is now pale white, hot pink, and taupe yellow, depending on where you look. I also have a small bruise, and how the hell that got there, I have no idea. I still have splotches of hair in a few places, and in others, I am missing a layer of skin. I have decided to shave the left side. Anyone who would like to have a barely used GG Cream Wax Microwave Formula Hair Removal System specially formulated for sensitive skin, you know where to find me. Thank you.
That was awesome, Kelly.
Thank you. That was awesome, Kelly. That was a lot of fun. Everybody, Kelly McDermott! Bringing some art. Okay, I want to take a moment to encourage everyone to stop at our local women's club bake sale at the library. All benefits go to benefit the local library, so please go over and support our local library and the women's club.
That's fine. Thank you.
That's 2 years in a row for the women's club. So, everyone, the women's club! Our next poet up is Mr. Jacob Pratt. Is Jacob here? Wow, Jacob. I just want to say, like, I'm excited to hear you perform. I haven't seen anyone that was as intense looking as you since Henry Rollins. And I was fortunate enough to see Henry Rollins many times. One of my favorite. I saw him... closed DC Space in the early 90s. And Ian McKay was there from Fugazi. It was incredible. Yeah. Again, everyone, Jacob!
Good afternoon, folks. How are we doing today? I want to start this off by saying rest in peace to Prince. Seriously. So, I'm a spoken word poet. I'm a hip-hop artist. I am an artist. I am anything that I turn out to be. This first song that I'm going to share with you is actually about overcoming addiction. I'm 5 years clean off drugs, 1 year clean off alcohol. So if you have any problems, believe me, you have enough power within yourself to do it. So... at the end of the rope, broke. I'm numbed up like nose coke. 3 times over fish scale, I'm burning base. I guess hope floats in the river, live it quiver. Get it quicker, get the shakes. The fire water fantasy, I burn a tree inside my lake. These flakes of residue ash, I move past, drawing pictures. I burn the wick on both ends while I stay scribbling my scriptures. Transistor transmit, I'll break it down the middle. Empty out to fill it up, I'll find a fire just a little. Enough to get a spark and think that all I do is cough and drink. And through my vision of disorder, I will rise into the brink. Directions gotta change parallel, oh well. Wait. Directions gotta change parallel, no well, oh well. I actually just forgot it. Directions gotta change parallel, no. No heaven, no hell. Exist in this mind's the mind. Set aside, find the time. Not enough to sober up completely, but I walk the line. Rewind my broke lips, cloud nine to dope sick. Constant flow and motion intertwined with some focus. Always on that dope sick, talking right here and now. And I was sober when I wrote this. Turkey vulture, clear them out. With a new path, a new thought, two barrels, one shot. Fought against my own resistance, repping for the have-nots. New path, new thought, two barrels, one shot. Fought against my own resistance, repping for the have-nots. Never will I say that I can't, though I won't. Used to bullshit lazy, now I don't. Make excuses, progress, a horizon. New to my vision so long I'm disguising. Potential that I had wasted and my dad. Sad at me he'd see that I didn't go grab. The chances that he wanted for himself so bad. He wasn't really disappointed, just a little bit mad. My mother held her tongue about the truth of my existence. Told me to work hard and give that alcohol distance. Away from the glass lip I sipped so well. Destroyed a body she created, I put her through hell. And well deserved were the words that I heard of concern. Of me sipping fire water till my insides burn. First sickness, medicine, the diagnose was relevant. Hypertrophy, ventricle, the stress must lessen then. I reach to new heights and mountaintops, I scream. I echo down through the valleys, can you hear my dreams? It ain't all that it seems, so stray off the path. Tradition is part of the problem, gotta do the math. These answers never come when you're sitting on your ass. It took me a while to realize I'm now moving past. Habits I developed at the age of 13, 16 years later, just now coming clean. In between dreams, I awake with new breath. It's easier for me to see now that I've seen progress. 100%, I'm always giving no less. I'll catch a spirit from the sun and let my soul manifest. I hit the ground running and I always look back to see what I'll never be again. I did change that. With a new path, new thought, two barrels, one shot, fought against my own resistance, repping for the have-nots. The next one I'm going to do is very environmentally minded. My father worked for the Maryland Department of Environment, but lived in West Virginia. And, you know, if I have any time to say anything, it's really just think about what you're doing. Think about the environment, thinking about what we're doing, because I want my kids to be able to see a field of corn one day. And the way we're going, unless you go to Brazil, that may not happen. So, the eyes of a new day, another sunrise, the light pierced the canopy as the nighttime died. I saw my breath through the mist and then a hawk in the sky, a red tail to be exact, and then the world came alive. And from the mountain to the rivers to the valley, and I know that all this limestone, it came from many moons ago, because we were all underwater, neap and tied with the flow. Subduction made it rise through orogenesis grow. Tectonic plates moving and they always go slow. We have seven different slabs and some volcanoes. But see, through standard deviation, if I work it to the middle, I'm a little bit unsure this inner core is getting brittle. Depleting resources, even though it seems fickle, it amounts up to more. We're confused in the riddle. Transmittal to the sky, and I'm belittled by the lies. It'll all come to a point that we will once again reprise. We are strangling our mother. She is almost not alive, but we're sitting here in nature with some clouds moving by. And I don't know how we got here. I don't know how we made it. I know if we push hard enough, eventually we'll break it. This world is beautiful. It has so many different faces. But the one it's wearing now is neither calm nor complacent. I don't know how we got here. Don't know how we made it. I know if we push hard enough, eventually we'll break it. This world is beautiful. It has so many different faces. But the one it's wearing now is neither calm nor complacent. Look beyond the horizon all the way to the black, and with my age I'm realizing you can't follow a track. Constructed by lions, blood hungry at that, but see what odds are we defying if the whole world is trapped. From the positive, the negative, the dark into the light, you never quit ahead of it, lost into the night. These stars may set a path, but it does not mean the right, it just depends upon position where the sun is burning bright. We want more but need less. We start wars and then regress. And I'm not sure what it's for that we've endured this mean stress. Less than never getting better. I don't know about you, but man, I'm worried about the weather. What the hell we gonna do? It's like the world got sick, it up chucking the dispute. They threw it to the rivers and now they said forget you. About fixing it. Ridiculous. This water, it's not limitless. Concerned for the future because we started but they finish it. And I don't know how we got here. Don't know how we made it. I know if we push hard enough, eventually we'll break it. This world is beautiful. It has so many different faces, but the one it's wearing now is neither calm nor complacent. And, whoop. And, as I said, I used to do hip hop, so I'm gonna do it a little bit faster, and I hope that you can, keep up with it.
But,
all right. Dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, and I advance, but the trouble never fell at noon height. Entranced to a level why I'm pale through life, and then I stand strong as metal, why detail was right. Indecisive to the point that I toss and turn, light a fire to the bridge, and then I take what's earned. Antietam ran red, so many souls have yearned, but come around October, watch them candles burn. Blue Ridge running out on Skyline Drive, with my new flow coming as I hit my stride. Spit my pride about the land that I represent, Sharpsburg to the day that I die. Atheism flowing like the Soviet Union. I don't really think about it or the road that I'm choosing. Keep my eyes focused and I hope for improvement. Did it all on my own and I created the movement. Ejected the kinetic energy to my own style. Perfected my own pedigree. Know I walk a cold mile. Life is what it's meant to be. Sometimes it'll go while picking up the scattered pieces, reconstructing the profile. Broke, then fixed. It is still not the same. Regenerate, build new. The scar still remains. Tattoos and memories, and then I wince at the pain of knowing what I once was, reminiscing of my change. I chalk up the bad and with the good that remains, I have pride in my past and stand by my name. So get up. Thank you, folks, very much. I hope you all have a great day.
That was really exciting, Jacob. That was a really, really good performance. I haven't seen anything like that since I saw the film Slam. If you guys have never seen it, you should. 1995 Slam, incredible film.
That was awesome.
It was. It is dynamite.
That was intense.
Yep.
Welcome back, everyone. Again, I am the Reverend Godfather. You just listened to Darcy Farrell, Kelly Dermot Harmon, and Jacob Pratt, plus the MC of Don Ramirez, plus a guest announcer with Earl, Isaac Antonetti. I hope I pronounced everyone's name right. If not, let me know. The announcements are that we have three more episodes pertaining to the Chocolate Fest coming up, mixed in with our usual program stuff, which is the hostfuls plus other interviews that we have, plus two more episodes pertaining to the four-state retro pop culture and Comic-Con that we were at this past April 30th in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, and we had a great time there. We'll let you know during our hostful. Plus loads of stuff coming up. If you like everything you heard in this episode, plus in any of our past episodes, you could always email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. Plus, we have a Twitter account, which is the same as our Instagram account, which is Longcoat Mafia. You can find us on Facebook, and you can also message us there and interact with us there. And that is the Longcoat Mafia podcast. And plus, all our past episodes are on our website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. Plus, we are on iTunes and Google Play. Plus, from what I am told, a lot of the podcasting apps have captured our show and stream us on them. So, give us a look-see and rate and review us. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
It's shocking, humiliating, and it's unacceptable.
Oh, come on. It's a classic. The only show in the world that gets better the more it's rerun.
Do I get a choice?
No! No!
Screw you guys! I'm going home.
Okay, people, move along. There's nothing to see here.